I know you well enough to know you're going to say this is a perfect like amalgamation of what we just talked about, because that clip served no purpose except for to shame Ted Cruz. That's
correct.
And to get clicks and to promote the they're stupid because they want to involve themselves in Iran. I'm smarter because I know everything. I'm the expert. And that right there is a great illustration of what we're talking about.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
You got a little pep in your step this morning. How you doing?
Well, it's Thursday, so I don't know. I like Thursdays.
I do. I like Thursdays, too, because Thursdays, like, we do the podcast. Then I feel like as soon as I finish editing the podcast, I can move into, like, weekend mode, because Fridays are usually my, like, my, what do you call that? My errand day?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I just like Thursdays. Generally, Sean and I go on a date sometimes, and I just, not today, but like, I just like Thursdays a lot.
Thursdays are a good day. So what are we talking about today? I don't know why my microphone's like possessed. It keeps moving. Stop moving. What are we talking about today? We're going to talk about, and we're going to, obviously, what everybody's talking about, frankly, is what the heck is going on in Israel and Iran. But we're not going to talk about it as in, like, because, you know, we're not exactly war correspondents over here. We can't tell you who's been hit and where and where things are moving. However, how it is working or how it's down here stateside, specifically in the, quote, MAGA group. There's a lot of talk about how Trump support of MAGA, which I, you know, is like a very broad, I'm using this as a broad term, is divided and debating whether or not we should have any involvement, partial involvement, pretend like nothing's happening, go all in. There's just a lot of debate going on. So we're going to talk about that debate. And we're also going to be touching at the end of the episode on the Supreme Court ruling on the Tennessee law that bans medicalization, transgender treatment for minors, which was such good news, especially
excellent news.
Yeah. I was like, so we're going to kind of explain exactly what the opinion said, what the left is saying that surprisingly is not true, and also some interesting points that were made in especially Barrett's concurrence, which I wanted to bring up. So let's go ahead and let's get into first what is on the top of everyone's mind is Israel and Iran. And what a lot of the media are attempting to project as a civil war in MAGA, which I really don't think is that serious. Like,
I don't know. I kind of think there's a lot of, I'm talking about online MAGA. I think there is.
I mean, online MAGA.
Online MAGA, for sure. But I think it's bleeding into, I don't know. I've had some discussions with people who aren't, you know, heavily online lately, and they've got strong opinions. So I don't know.
Well, and I think it's valid. I think this is an issue that's definitely going to bring on strong opinions. I especially think it's an issue that's going to bring on strong opinions because we all still have PTSD from Bush, Cheney, Iraq, Afghanistan. You know what I mean? It's not like they're not valid.
No.
It's just kind of, for me anyways, taking some time to analyze what is happening today and recognize that there are some really, even though it may feel a little bit familiar, there are some really big contrasts, things that are really different that I personally am not in the mindset that this is going to be like another Iraq war or that we're dealing with, you know, false reports of weapons of mass destruction, you know, which is what happened the first time around, you know? But I think it's like completely valid, which is really, that is what is the primary focus, especially online, that is generating this debate.
Yeah. I think that the difference right now is it's less about, are we being hoodwinked and lied to? And we're going to get ourselves into a protracted war. I think the feud now is between people who are sitting there going, I'm not a neocon war hawk. I just want Iran to be denuked. I don't want them to have capabilities like that. So let's go in, let's get her done and get out. And then there's the other side that's going, yeah, but that is a neocon position. We shouldn't be involving ourselves. This is not our war. What do we have to do with the Middle East? I don't want to be a part of this. And I do think it's more complicated than that, but I definitely think that the position in MAGA right now, people are taking pretty stark sides in it, and they're starting to infight. And it was bound to happen. I feel like when you have a bunch of influencers and talking heads, podcasters, commentators that have such strong opinions, and it's been like pedal to the metal, get elected, go, go, go. It's almost as if people needed a new place to kind of push their energy. And this topic specifically, like no other topic I've seen with MAGA, they're starting to pick at each other big time, as opposed to, well, there's some nuance to this theory.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the first time I've started to see real cracks in the movement. And it's on this topic, because I think for a lot of people, this is a defining feature of what people thought MAGA was. And they're having to kind of wrap their heads around, not everything is as cut and dry. Maybe Trump isn't precisely what you thought he was going to be when he said he wanted peace and he didn't want forever wars. Did that necessarily mean that he was never going to involve ourselves in something?
Well, I think, I mean, frankly, if that's the case, I think you're really naive, because it's not like he didn't do some of this in his first term.
Right.
You know, and I think there's a big difference here. Like, you know, there's like comparisons of him being made to Bush and things like that, which I think is like,
I think that's silly.
Ridiculous. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. We're dealing with a completely different president. We're actually dealing, believe it or not, with a completely different situation. And I don't see, like, it depends on the scale of the involvement. And Obviously, I have 100% zero interest of, like, just to emphasize, of getting into any kind of regime change, forever war, or anything like that.
Well, but I guess the next question, though, is, and I'm hearing people say that a lot, and so my natural follow-up to that would be, and it's, I feel the same as you, but I think for some people, their natural next question is, fine, if you don't want a regime change, then what's the point of going in and busting up all these bombs and engaging in a hot war? I know, listen, but I'm hearing people ask this exact question. And so for them, it doesn't make sense in their minds for us to involve ourselves in a highly volatile situation when there is other players. We're looking at Russia, China. You've got Arab states that are like, well,
why? Okay. Let me just say this. If you're dealing, I absolutely agree. We have these other threats that we have to deal with. China and Russia primarily. Let's just say, you know, those two. If you have the capability of taking out someone who is going to be taking advantage of the fact that you're distracted and having to deal with these superpowers, China and Russia, and who are starting to like send out, they're going to take advantage of it. That's a fact. If we get in any kind of, if we get distracted, or if we are in peak distraction or whatever, and I don't mean distraction as like coordinated. I just mean like something's going on over there and we got to deal with it. If you don't think Iran's going to be like, oh, this is my opportunity to like build up my proxies or send my proxies out or activate people, or when nobody's looking, continue to enrich and build our nuclear arsenal, or like, of course they're going to do that. So why wouldn't you take them out or take out that capability? I don't even think we need to take out Iran. I don't even think we need to assassinate the Ayatollah. I don't think we need to switch out the regime. The only thing I think the United States' interest is to take out any capability of them having nuclear weapons. And let's say everybody's like, well, what if they don't even have them, or people are arguing they don't have them, which I don't believe. I believe that they don't have the weapon itself, but I do believe that they are, you know, close to having it. And I can also debate why because, you know, the other argument is like, well, they've been saying that for 20 years. Well, I can explain to you why they've been saying that for 20 years. And it seems like, you know, they haven't done it yet. It's because Israel has been going in, putting road bumps on the process. But regardless of that, like, why wouldn't you want to eliminate that threat? You can eliminate that threat without having to then go in and do a regime change. Honestly, in my opinion, you eliminate the threat because it benefits us. Yes, it also benefits Israel more, but it does benefit us, especially when it comes to weakening the regime itself in order to be able to fund these proxies that create terror threats throughout the world.
Yeah, I'm not, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you what I'm hearing online, and I'm going, all right, well, we need to, these are genuine people who have genuine concerns, and they're in MAGA. So it's, you know, it's worth at least engaging with the thought experiment of, you know, with their concerns. And those are concerns I heard from high profile MAGA. It's not like these people are idiots. You know, you got Tucker Carlson saying something very similar in his basically rebuke of this engagement between Donald Trump and Israel and Iran.
Yeah, but I mean, and I think that the big thing is that the two loudest voices right now, and I think that's, this is probably the problem. The two loudest voices, am I saying that right? The two loudest voices, okay, mm-hmm. is the isolationist and the war hawk, when in fact, Trump is neither one of those, and he is the one who's going to make the final decision. And it's, you know, I would probably argue, you can say that it's Trump's responsibility to deliver that message, that it's not the Trump versus, what is it, Mark Levin, for example.
Yeah.
He's not in either one of those camps, which typically our politicians are. Like, they'll fall hard into one camp or the other. And that's why I'm saying, like, this presidency is different, because he's taking he's considering the third option. And he really wants the third option, preferably the third option to be Iran lays down their arms, does a full surrender, you know, gets rid of their nuclear, you know, program. And then we can all move on. Now, Israel is not going to be a big fan of that, but who cares about that, you know? And I think because we have these two loud voices of war hawk versus isolationist, people are arguing on which camp to fall in. And I don't think either one of them is really going to be the end result or is the option. I think it's going to be the third one that's not really getting enough of a voice.
I think there is, though, there's a lot of people that find themselves right in the middle of that, where they would say, I'm a hawkish isolationist or a hawkish nationalist.
Well, it's like a realist.
Yeah, I care most about my country, but I reserve the right to go, excuse the pun, nuclear on someone who, that's what Trump is. Like, he wants peace, but he also is telling people, like, if you mess with us, I might go crazy. And that type of, it's a brand of hawkishness. It definitely detours a lot of, you know, bad actors. And so there's a lot of people in the middle. Although there was a Washington Post poll that came out, I think this morning, I was reading it. It said it was about 47% of the GOP does not back intervention in this conflict. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, and I think it depends on the question, because there's intervention in this conflict where a lot of people think it's, you know, they immediately think it's boots on the ground.
Right.
It's, you know, the potential of getting caught up in another conflict that goes on forever.
Well, yeah, which I completely, less about us offering Israel, you know, kind of the brains and the brawn, and not necessarily us putting our soldiers in harm's way. But, you know, everything comes at a cost. Even them using I'm at a loss for words this morning. Using our physical, help me out. What's the word? Like, our ships.
You're talking about munitions
our air control. And even Trump's statement yesterday, 2 days ago, all the days are a blur. When he was saying, like, we have basically.
Yeah, I think that's really in Tucker.
I was like, what does that mean? Does that mean we as in America, or what does that mean? Like, are
well, the we, because that was brought up. Oh, first of all, before I move on and bring that up, there was another poll, because you mentioned the Washington Post poll. There was another poll by this group called JL Partners. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
Where it says, and that's where I mentioned, like, it depends on how you present the question, because it says, would you support or oppose the U.S. launching its own strikes on Iran military installations and key infrastructure? So just like strikes on the infrastructure.
Oh, and 65%.
MAGA Republicans supported it by 65%. So it just really depends on, like, how you present the question. Mm-hmm. And then this whole thing about, you know, because, you know, Trump said, we have control, like he used the term we, and also Tucker Carlson, you know, and Ted Cruz sat down for an interview. And that was, you know, at some point in that interview, Cruz says something about, he also uses the term we, and Tucker acts like, well, what do you mean we? Like, you're breaking news here, because I'm, you know, to understand that we're not having... We is from the very not from the very beginning, but it is well before Trump said we and well before Cruz said we, it was known that the United States was offering defense for Israel.
Yeah. So it's not like Cruz was saying anything revolutionary. I think Tucker was trying to bait him into saying something
multiple
controversial
times.
And then also like taking things that were less than controversial and like spinning them up and trying to make it this like huge, huge deal that really wasn't for people paying attention. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the clips were very clippy, you know?
Oh, yeah. But and he knows that. He knew that.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Tucker, let me just go through what some on the isolationist side are saying, specifically mostly Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon, because Carlson has been saying, you know, one of the things he said that we need to drop Israel. He says if Israel wants to wage this war, it has every right to do so. It's a sovereign country and it could do as it pleases, but not with America's backing. So that was his newsletter, which is one of the things that really first kind of spun up this debate, or not, you know, the debate was already there, but like brought it up even more, because obviously Tucker is seen as a big influential person in MAGA. And in the newsletter,
he has a close relationship with Trump. He's been at everything pre-election, supporting him bigly, if you will, on his podcast for months, you know, he's an apologist for him, which is, I think, did a lot of favors for Trump. But recently, really questioning some things about the president.
Well, and that's just it, because, you know, that's where it's like a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's pretty significant, because in his newsletter, you know, he said this. And then he also said, while the American military may not have physically perpetuated the assault, years of funding and sending weapons to Israel, which Donald Trump just bragged about on Truth Social, undeniably placed the U.S. at the center of last night's events. Again, criticizing any type. But again, this is an isolationist view. It's like any type of involvement whatsoever. And they bring this up for a multitude of reasons, not only because they don't want the United States to be involved, but also because they just have, you know, you have the libertarian wing, too, which is going really hard on X.
Yeah.
Because they just have a moral
opposition.
Yeah. Opposition or objection to any type of conflict or any type of war, regardless of who is. What's interesting to me, especially in the libertarian mindset, is like I feel like. It's like they never support it in any way, even if it's in defense.
Yeah, I think that people feel really good when they do that. I do understand that. Like it's a consistency thing. And so they'd rather feel like superior in the consistency rather than like budge a little when it actually could be a net good for America. You know what I mean? Like that seems interesting.
Yeah, but they'll say, so you're arguing that it's a net good to be killing people.
No, I'm arguing that sometimes we have to engage in conflict in order to preserve the national security of our country.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree with you, but I'm just saying, like, that's what they're going to be like, oh, so you're going to say that
there's a net good out. Of course, because that's, like, the easiest argument to try and have a gotcha moment. But really, it's just, like, kind of lazy. Like, you are saying I'm lazy, or I'm really, what's the word, evil, kind of. And I'm saying you're lazy because you can't think more broadly about, you know, a topic. But I see what you're saying on their part. I don't think I engage with enough libertarians to get annoyed by it. Maybe I should.
I don't know if you're familiar with Dave Smith. He's a comedian.
Yeah, I wrote about him yesterday.
Okay. So, well, Dave Smith is one of the, I would probably say, like, if you're talking about the divide that voted for MAGA or for Trump, he would be the loudest voice on the libertarian side.
See,
where
I just
he's calling for the impeachment.
I think of him as confused. Like, he's kind of the snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. Like, he's the one who now is all of a sudden, Trump has literally done nothing yet, has not made up his mind, is trying to negotiate peace with all these different countries.
And he's calling for his impeachment.
And he's calling for his impeachment for thinking, like for existing. That's confusion to me. And that's just, again, I talked about it on my stories yesterday. To me, that is so much hubris that these people have, thinking that they obviously know everything that's happening in, like, the Situation Room and in the Oval Office. Like, they think that they understand exactly the intel that the president's getting. And so they're already prescribing exactly what he should do at any given moment in any given country. Like, they get it, right? And it's so silly to me, especially someone like Dave Smith, too, who was on Rogan and was so mad when someone like Douglas Murray was trying to...
You haven't been?
Yeah, the expert class. But there's Dave Smith sitting there in his podcast basement talking about, I mean, no offense. I mean, I actually think he's really engaging. But it's like, bro, he hasn't even done anything yet. Like, if he starts, he is engaging. He is discussing options. But until he pulls the trigger, like,
I mean, isn't that what we want?
Correct. Like, I would think that's what you want.
Yeah. Like, isn't
that a president that engages and is able to handle some kind of nuance and debates and looks for the best possible deal for... Do you think you're going to always know what the best possible deal is if you don't engage with all of the different many moving parts in a situation? And I just think someone like Dave Smith is already like, I already have it all figured out. He just needs to do what I say or else impeach him. And
yeah,
I don't find that helpful at all. And in fact, if anything, it whips up a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of the base who are already getting an earful from these all of a sudden Middle East experts. Like, I don't know. I don't find it helpful.
Funny because, you know, in that same discussion on Rogan, you know, he had said to Murray, criticizing, like, you're saying that I have to be an expert to have an opinion, right? Do you know who, this is so ridiculous. This is so online, you guys. It's almost embarrassing. Do you know who Rob Schreiner is?
Yeah. Rob
Schneider. The comedian.
Schneider. Yes. Okay.
The other comedian.
Hilarious. Yes.
So he posted something about, I don't even remember what it was, about this conflict or whatever. And Dave Smith reposts him and basically tells him, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not even like dismissing him and how dare him speak up and have an opinion. And I'm like, are you... You literally, this is the same.
That's what I'm saying, though. These people think that they know everything and they speak with so little humility, like they've got the world figured out. I think that that's the problem I'm having, you know, without being slanderous. I think that's the problem I'm having with a lot of these conservative voices who are getting a taste of fame and a lot of notoriety. And
oh, you talked about this in your stories yesterday, right?
They have a lot of a huge following, and that can be really addictive. And you can start to feel like you can't be wrong. Like, you can't fail. You're too big to fail. And I'm seeing that with, like, Candace Owens, who has been like this for a long time, in my opinion, where she is right. You are wrong. Period. End of story. And people like certainty. It makes them feel comfortable and it makes them feel safe. And so they follow these voices who refuse to acknowledge nuance, refuse to discuss things with people, and kind of live in this very binary. And don't get me wrong, some things are binary. There's lots of topics that I won't budge on, but I'll still have a conversation with someone without making them feel like an idiot. And that's a hallmark of what I'm seeing people like Dave Smith, Candace Owen. Ian Michael Carroll, is that his name?
Yeah, Ian Carroll. Yeah,
and even I have to admit, like, even Tucker, when he was, I listened to the entire interview with him and Ted Cruz, And look, Tucker's a master at what he does. He's really, really good at interviewing. He's really good at gotcha-ing people, getting them to say exactly what he wants for the soundbite. However, Tucker, in my opinion, and again, I really like him, he was insufferable in that interview.
You know, as a homeschool mom with four girls, finding news content that's actually appropriate for kids feels almost impossible these days. Everything's either dumbed down to the point of being useless, or it's filled with stuff I have to pre-screen because, heaven forbid, we get actual facts without a woke agenda attached. That's why I love Worldwatch. It's a daily news video designed specifically for kids that doesn't make me nervous about what they're going to hear. My girls actually get excited when it's time for our 10 minutes of Worldwatch because it covers real stories, the big, important stuff, and the fun, lighter things, all with a biblical worldview that aligns with our family's values. And can we talk about how refreshing it is to have news that recognizes God's design in everything? Plus, with a paid subscription, you get access to their full archive. So if we want to revisit a story or catch up on something we missed, it's all right there. Worldwatch delivers fact-based video news you can feel good about. As a busy homeschool mom, that's exactly what I need. Daily videos that help my kids explore the world while keeping our faith at the center. Check out the link in our show notes to get 3 free months. Trust me, it's an easy win for any parent who's tired of having to watch everything ahead of time just to make sure it's safe for their kids.
And he had some great moments where I was like, Ted,
I have a few of them here. You want to see them?
Yeah, let's do it. Because he had to have known what he was getting himself into. But that being said, I was like, yikes, Tucker, you know?
Well, and I think that was what was frustrating with me about, because I also watched the interview, and it was, first of all, Cruz, I would expect a little bit more of, and to be a little bit more nimble and know what he's walking into. And
can we talk about why Ted Cruz? Do we know why? Like, is it just because he was available?
And I think that is also very telling to me because, by the way, and it's really frustrating because even Candace Owens, I was telling this to my husband the other day, it's frustrating when you have people that when you have creators that it's like Laura Loomer is another one that they hit. And when they hit, sometimes they hit really good, you know, but there's enough muck that you have to dig through before you can just confidently believe anything that's coming out of their mouths, you know, right. And that they're not really just doing like this, like you mentioned, like it's, I don't know, it just comes off as clickbaity. And Tucker Carlson did this with Ted Cruz. And I think it's interesting that he has been dodging Ben Shapiro forever on a debate.
He won't Ben Shapiro would do one with him for sure.
Yeah, whether you like Shapiro or not, it doesn't even matter. The point is that obviously we all know Shapiro's position, and he has multiple times approached Tucker and said, let's debate this issue or let's have a discussion on this issue. And Tucker says, no, he won't do it. Now, Tucker says,
I have a guess why.
Well, he claims it's because he's not a debate me. Like, he doesn't do debates.
That's exactly what he did last night with Ted Cruz. So everything, these people are, they really do go back. And especially for Christians, we are being watched all the time by the general public. And I'm not saying, I mean, Tucker's not out there trying to evangelize, right? But for a lot of these new conservative voices, so many of them are taking on a mantle of faith and being a Christian. They're going to like the TPUSA faith in action stuff. They're outwardly sharing about their faith on their platforms. And I think that's important. I also think it's important to conduct yourself in a way that is respectable and not just operating in that influencer world in a manner that kind of seems to the listener, to the observer, that you're just trying to get to go viral. And I think that that's something I'm watching with a lot of these influencers. It feels like they're always striving for the
viral moment that's going to help them grow.
And it's very obvious to kind of notice. And once you see it, then you start seeing it everywhere. And I feel like that's destructive for
It's destructive for debate, for discussion,
and for the
general health of the country. And even when you shared that in your stories, I messaged Rachel and I was like, why aren't we doing this?
Yeah, we could be making a whole lot more money.
We could be making so much more money if we did this.
Yeah. But I also see like these, see these voices that start out. And I'm not going to say the name, but I was reading last night. No, you know how like Facebook will send you like on this
day.
Yeah,
like remember 10 years ago or
whatever.
It
was from 10 years ago. It was 2015. It was a big influencer now. And it was, he made a post. It was right after a shooting. And it was a long post. And he was just talking about how his heart breaks for the people involved and how he's so sad. He doesn't think he can handle this anymore with our country going down the direction it's going. And he's praying every night and hoping that the Lord will change the direction of the country and blah, 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 blah. And it was long. And I read the whole thing and I went, oh my gosh, he would never write that now, ever. Because what sells is, like we talked about, a much more harsh, hardline, binary, black and white, no room for discussion. This is my opinion. This is why it's right. And this is why you should follow along type of structure to the influencer world that allows no room for conversation or to change your mind or even just promote goodwill if you want to change someone else's mind. And I thought that was really interesting after what I was talking about yesterday in stories, for sure. And like I said, There's issues that are black and white. We're going to talk about one later. We're going to talk about the trans issue. There is no room for nuance, but I don't know. I think
This one, it's really hard because there's just like so many chess pieces. Like there's so many possibilities that can play out because there's things outside. There's outside forces that influence it, and you don't know how those outside forces are going to react. Yep. And so like the best that you can do is try and make the decision that is best for your interests, but also is like balancing, mitigating it, creating like a wave of response.
Yes.
And then specifically in regards to like that influencer thing, like to me, it was really telling the clip that Tucker chose to first share of that interview.
It was, and let me tell you, it's exactly what you're going to say. I know you well enough to know you're going to say this is a perfect like amalgamation of what we just talked about, because that clip served no purpose except for to shame Ted Cruz. That's
correct.
It. And to get clicks and to promote they're stupid because they want to involve themselves in Iran. I'm smarter because I know everything. I'm the expert. And that right there is a great illustration of what we're talking about. This does not promote anything.
Debate on the issue, and it doesn't inform anybody except to make Cruz. I'm going to go ahead and play it. Let's go.
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population.
At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
Why is it relevant whether it's 90 million or 80 million or 100 million? Why is that relevant?
Because if you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. Okay, what's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia. Okay,
you don't know anything about Iran. So,
I am not the Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government.
You're the one who
claims anything about the country.
No, you don't know anything about the country.
Yeah, that does no good for anybody. That's not good for the country. That's not good to promote Tucker's stance. It's not good to promote Ted's. It's not good to promote goodwill amongst conservatives who may have differing ideas. This is the problem we are doing in the GOP, in the conservative party. We are doing precisely what progressives do to us that we hate. Why?
Yes.
Why is this becoming acceptable? It is beneath us. It's beneath everybody, especially for people like Tucker, who has prided himself on discussion, long form debate, engaging with people you don't see eye to eye on because we want to learn. He is always talking about how he wants to be open, and he constantly is being self-deprecating, like, well, I'm kind of dumb, so I like to learn from other people, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, no, you knew that this was going to be an enormous get for your network, for your accounts. You know, I don't know. I was disappointed.
Yeah. And to me, it was just really... The most telling part, like I mentioned before I played it, is that that was the clip that he chose to promote it. And it's not even to say that you can't agree with him or that you can't criticize Cruz, you know what I mean, or anything. It's not about the discussion. It's actually the lack of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I don't know why he chose, you know, if anything, you know, you can kind of say both for Cruz, like how naive for him.
You definitely
to go
should
on.
Know. I get if you don't know the exact number of like Iranians or people
yeah,
who live in Iran.
You should know.
But you should definitely know the like ethnic makeup, because especially if there's going to be some sort of regime change, like
correct.
That's going to be important. And why Ted Cruz could have thought, I mean, again, I think it's all hubris with a lot of these people, but why he would go on Tucker's show and not be completely armed with every single talking point and know the information, knowing Tucker, like what? That's
do you
like,
think he thought that he was kind of going into quasi-friendly territory? And so he was
course,
just like, yeah, sure.
Of course. And now it's like knives out in the GOP. I also think he probably thinks he's really smart and he can like rest on his smarts, because Ted Cruz is really
yeah,
smart.
I mean, he is smart. There's no question about it. Tucker is smart, too. It's just they have both, you know, one's a senator and the other one's, frankly, a personality. Like, I wouldn't even, you know, interviewer or personality, whatever you want to categorize.
Well, and I was telling someone last night, we went to dinner and we were in friendly territory, like you just said. But we don't agree on everything that has to do with this conflict necessarily. But, you know, we're adults. Both Christians, we can chat about stuff. And he, you know, the gentleman I was talking to is a whole lot smarter than I am. So I'm listening to what he's saying. And I told him, I said, you know, the bummer is I really enjoy listening to Tucker interview people that he likes.
Yes.
When he likes someone, even if he disagrees with them, and there's been like little small disagreements here and there on, I enjoy listening to his, genuinely enjoy how he interviews. I found this particular interview completely irritating, not enjoyable at all. It was annoying to me.
Well,
and I think it was just because you could taste his disdain for Ted Cruz, for how far apart they are on this issue for whatever reason. You could just tell he didn't like Ted Cruz. So.
Well, and there's another, it's interesting that you say that because, like, for example, it's not like Tucker is the only one that's criticizing this. You know, Steve Bannon is out there criticizing it, too. However, his approach, you know, is, frankly, I think more thoughtful than mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson's.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, it's not like even Marjorie Taylor Greene is out. I mean, she was defending Tucker Carlson and.
Well, once you know, the president called Tucker kooky, she was like,
yeah.
Not on my watch. Tucker's my boy, you know.
Which I thought
okay.
Was
like, we're
okay.
All aligning. Like, this is the great divide, I guess. We all have to take sides. It's either MTG and Tucker or what?
Well, I mean, the other side, which I am not on board with, is Mark Levin.
Lindsey Graham
with his,
I have
like,
to say no to that situation.
Yeah, he's like, Lindsey Graham is just gross. Like, his whole thing. Just
well, we need to
like,
be nice. We need to be nice.
Sorry. I don't mean him, per se. I mean
yes,
his reaction to, a little bit. But, I mean, like, primarily his reaction to all
to
this.
Anything war. Anything conflict. He's like, let's go. Let's
yeah,
go.
He just seems, like, super excited. And it's really telling to me that this man who has no children and no family and no future investment, just like, you know, many on the Democrat side are just, like, so okay with like exploring policies that mm-hmm. aren't good for the future.
Yeah.
And Lindsey Graham is one of those.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Levin is just an old school hawk, you know, that just wants
where
to.
Where has Marco Rubio been? Where's Rubio? I have missed him. I don't know where he is, but now would be a great time to hear from him.
Yeah, he's been pretty quiet.
He's been quiet.
I mean, he's probably holding that cabinet meeting all by himself.
Well, yeah, because he's literally, yeah, he does the job of six men, which is great.
So he has been, I mean, it's not surprising to me that, I mean, he is the Secretary of State, so he has a lot to be involved in here. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, Trump is out there. Trump is, like, he is giving us up-to-date information via Truth on pretty the regular, which is pretty, like, rare. You typically don't see that when there's anything brewing or like a conflict going on. Uh-huh. So I think that's been really interesting. It's also like a sign of like how this is not previous Republican administrations who are dealing with conflict.
Right.
And again, like in Trump's first term, I forget who it was. He killed. Oh, my gosh. He did a strike in Syria on, if Amanda was here, she would be able to tell me immediately. And everybody said, like, initially, everybody was like panicked that he's starting World War III. Nothing came of it. And in fact, it was probably one of the things that contributed to Syria, even though Syria is still kind of, you know, yeah, we'll see how it pans out. It seems to have calmed down pretty significantly compared to what we were dealing with in the past.
Yeah.
So I, you know, that's why I'm saying, like, my hope is that if we were to, that we would provide this one aid, support, whatever, with Fordow, and then be like, look, the Iranian people, your regime has been utterly weakened. They no longer have their nuclear power. We're no longer interested because it's no longer our problem, because now they're not a threat to us. Now is your time to rise up and decide. You know, now I'm sure they probably have their opinions of who, like, and I mean they as in like Israel and other, may have their opinions of who they would like to rise up. But you also have to remember that this operation that Israel did would not have happened if there was some, if there was not some opposition in leadership positions within Iran. So there's already somebody, like, there's already has to be some group of people or some, you know, that are willing to step up and take a leadership position because they were looking to take down this current regime.
Yeah, obviously, and there's people like the citizens. They are definitely, they are many of them saying, like, we support Israel. Please free us from this basically prison that they've been in for decades.
So that's my ideal, like, gameplay would be like something like that. It's like, okay, we got rid of our threat, the threat to the United States and to our ally. We're out. You guys decide, are you going to do a revolution? Are you going to rise up against your regime? Are you going to vote somebody else in? Are you going to, like, is, I don't know, the crown prince, who I hear is not very popular, who's been in exile in Maryland for, like,
Maryland, not Russia.
Yeah, for, like, ever. You know, is he going to come back? There's a multitude of ways that it could play out. But the point being that it's left up to the people of Iran and that we have nothing to do with it. And as long as that's how things play out, I'm totally cool
with
that.
Well, but that's the thing, is I'm cool with that as well. I just want to understand, so many of these voices within MAGA are saying things like, so like Charlie Kirk said, I can tell you right now, our MAGA base does not want a war at all whatsoever. They do not want U.S. involvement. They do not want the United States to be engaged in this. Okay, fine. So if he's saying that, and I do believe that Charlie Kirk has a really, really good pulse on the MAGA base, obviously, does he mean then that what Trump is about to do, if he greenlights this final plan that we're hearing that he has, where he's going to basically be like, yep, go in, buster bunker, bunker buster, whatever you want to call it, Fordow, and let's do this, and we're here, we'll give you the intel, we'll give you the missiles you need, we'll give you whatever, like, supplies you need, end it. So is Charlie Kirk basically calling for a disengagement of that as well? I don't understand then. Do they want us to just be like, Israel, you're on your own, goodbye? Or are they okay with some slight type of involvement in that sense?
And I think there's people that say no, none, yet, whatsoever. But I think that's just a very easy, like, it's kind of like, I don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what's going to happen is, in the best case scenario regarding involvement, if we actually stay involved and we go in, we're able to disengage Iran from nuclear capabilities, and it's relatively easy in that sense. Fordow's destroyed, and then we pull out and we're done. I think a lot of the base who's like, no involvement, no involvement,
they're going to suddenly be like, oh, okay.
Okay, well, that was good. And that's what I meant. That's what I wanted in the first place. It's like, no game.
Well, even it was Bannon who he was at some forum for the Christian Monitor. And even he said something along the lines that MAGA will, it says, if President Trump decides to do that, I know the MAGA movement will say, look, we trust your judgment. As in, like, you know, they'll eventually get behind the president.
Well, yeah. And I think that that's the whole point. Like, all of these people, not all of them, but a lot of the people that are all of a sudden now Middle East experts and are like, that's it, impeach him. It's like, you know what? You were telling us that we need to trust the process and you don't have to love everything he does, but you need to trust what Trump is doing. Trust the process again, like I said. And there, a lot of them are the ones like Liberation Day. They're like, I don't have to understand it. I just support the president. I don't have to understand it. I just support the president. And now it comes to this where he clearly has information we do not. And they're like, well, this is a bridge too far. I don't want anything that has to do with this at all. Instead of their previous narrative, which really was much of a, you know, trust what he's doing. He doesn't want war. He wants peace. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's also interesting about, like, you know, when you come up with this absolute, you know, we will not get involved or do anything whatsoever. So Trump was asked by Caitlin Collins on, you know, Tucker Carlson's comments. I'm going to go ahead and play that for you guys here.
Have you seen the Tucker Carlson, Senator Ted Cruz interview? It seems like this issue on whether or not the United States should strike is kind of dividing a lot of your supporters.
No, my supporters are for me. My supporters are America First. They make America great again. My supporters don't want to see Iran have a nuclear weapon. Tucker's a nice guy. He called and apologized the other day because he thought he said things that were a little bit too strong. And I appreciated that. And Ted Cruz is a nice guy. I mean, he's been with me for a long time. I'd say once the race was over, he's been with me ever since, right? But very simple. If they think that it's okay for Iran to have a nuclear weapon, then they should oppose me. But nobody thinks it's okay. People that don't want, I don't want to fight either. I'm not looking to fight. But if it's a choice between fighting and them having a nuclear weapon, you have to do what you have to do.
And he even brought up, I'm gonna play another one for you too, where specifically he talked about something that Tucker said.
And it's interesting because I did ask Tucker, I said, well, are you okay with nuclear weapons being in the hands of Iran? And he sort of didn't like that. He didn't want to really, but he sort of didn't like that. And I said, well, if it's okay with you, then you and I do have a difference.
If it's okay with you.
It's really not okay with him. Therefore, you may have to fight, and maybe it'll end, and maybe it'll end very quickly. But there's no way that you can allow, whether you have to fight or not, you can allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon because the entire world will blow up. Not going to let that happen.
You had a bit of a row with...
So, I mean, he's not wrong. It's basically what Amanda said. He's like, she said, if indeed they have capabilities and they produce a nuclear weapon, every single Arab country is going to have a nuke. They all are going to arm. And the last thing that we want in our country is all of the Saudis, Egypt, like, we don't need all of them having nuclear weapons. Like, no, this is very, very bad. I mean, so Trump's not wrong. And the further we go into this, and I listen to Trump talk, the more absurd it is to me, the people whose hair is on fire about this guy being some kind of like maniacal king. Like, he is so chill and he's just very much like, well, I don't want to fight. I mean, if we have to,
I really don't.
I don't want them to have a nuke. Tucker's a nice guy. Ted's great too. He's so not at all what these insane people think he is. He's more chill than all of the influencers online who are running around.
Which, thank goodness. Like, that's...
I mean, yes. But he's the least volatile of all of them. Like, and they are the ones who think that they could negotiate us out of this better. It's just... It's entertaining.
Well, and the reports are... The most recent reports are that basically Trump has approved... Now, I think it's wild that this stuff is leaking, too. So I want to know who's leaking this.
Exactly.
But I think it was... I don't remember if it was the Wall Street Journal or Axios, but there was a report, because they both reported it, but I don't remember who had the exclusive, that he has decided on a strike, basically that he's given it a green light, but he's trying to give Iran this last chance to...
Come to the table.
He even mentioned something, because like, Iran is posturing and saying, no, we will fight and, you know, the evil United States and we have no interest in having conversations. But then there's also reports that they're reaching out to the White House, wanting to come in, come back to the table during that same Oval Office address or meeting. I don't want to call it address because that's more official. He even mentioned that they even asked to come to meet with him, which I was like, no.
Didn't they say also, no, they didn't?
Correct. That's what I'm saying, is that they, like, Iran publicly is saying one thing, but the White House is saying, oh, well, actually, they're kind of coming to the table begging and asking for deals. Now, is that Trump trying to pretend and shame Iran, or is Iran the one that's posturing? I don't know. It could be going either way. Both parties are capable of such things.
Well, but Trump's saying pretty smart. He could have intentionally put something like that out to be like, you know, you need to get your butts
over
here.
Well, to help his image, so either side is capable of this.
Yes.
But as of right now, the report is that he has green-lighted it, and it's basically just kind of, he's waiting for the last, he just wants to absolutely be sure, which, I mean, I appreciate that Iran is given every single opportunity to, you know, come to the table, and, you know, he's, you could tell he's frustrated because he's like, I don't even want a deal anymore. Yeah. I want to surrender.
He said, I'm getting tired of this. My patience is wearing thin.
He's like, I want to surrender. And so I also want to move on real quick because, you know, in case anyone is, thinking that we just went through a Tucker bashing over the last 40 minutes or whatever.
No, it wasn't.
No,
that's the whole thing.
I'm just saying, there's been also a lot of talk about him possibly having Qatari connections, or that he was paid by Qatar specifically because he did this interview with the Qatar prime minister. And a lot of people have pointed out that that interview, which is not a false observation, that he was particularly soft with the prime minister of Qatar versus Ted Cruz.
Well, and now, it was brought up because Laura Loomer, once Tucker started getting in the crosshairs with Donald Trump, Laura Loomer, who, if you're not familiar, that's fine. You're just continue living your life. She's a far right. I don't even like saying far right, but I would say.
No.
She's a,
she's an eccentric for sure.
Yes.
She's
and
very
she was
loud.
MAGA 1000% has always been.
She's a little bit of a zealot when it comes to Trump.
When it
Let's
comes
be
to
honest.
Trump. Like, she's unapologetic. He does no wrong ever, 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 ever. And she will be the commander in his army any day. Like, she. Yes. So.
And she does have influence in the White House. Like, she has the president's ear on certain issues.
Yes.
Especially, you know, she was digging up things on staff and, you know, making sure that anyone who is around Trump is faithful to Trump. So.
But then at the same time, she'll, like, you know, do a low-key racist tweet every now and then. You're like, please don't do that.
Please
stop
don't
that,
do that.
Please.
Stop.
But anyway, so she, when Tucker started getting feisty about the whole situation and kind of opposing Trump or questioning Trump's loyalty to MAGA and to conservative values, she threw up a, hey, by the way, don't listen to Tucker. He's an idiot. And he took, what was it, $200,000 from the Qatari.
It's $180,000, something like that.
Yeah, from the Qatari government, by the way, they fund Hamas. Have a good night. Like, just very much.
And she did produce some FARA documents. So if you guys have been listening to us for a while, we've mentioned FARA before, which is the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And it is a requirement for any entity that is doing business in the United States to register. And if they're representing the interest of another country, like a foreign country. So the broad explanation of this is that there was like an advisory group that's called Lumen 8 Advisors. And Lumen 8 Advisors was hired by the Qatari prime minister to advise on this, on him doing this interview with Tucker. Okay. Now, Lumen put out a statement. They're like, look, we follow the rules. We registered as a foreign agent. And, you know, there's nothing of it. We were advising the prime minister. They didn't pay anything to Tucker for the interview, which the allegation is that Tucker is receiving Qatari funds and that he's being influenced by Qatar. And that's why he's, you know, defending Iran and opposing Israel. Like, that's the talking point.
Yeah.
I looked this over and it doesn't hold water, this allegation that Loomer is making. Mm-hmm. Because now here's the question, which there is no evidence of this, but is what people are speculating, is that Lumen paid, like they're questioning, did they pay for flight? Did they pay for the production? Is it kind of like, you know, remember how Kamala Harris and Beyonce were saying, or I'm sorry, not Beyonce. Well, Beyonce, yes. But Oprah were saying, oh, they didn't pay us, but they ended up paying the production company that put on the town hall, which is owned by Oprah. Them.
Right.
Correct. So the allegation is that it's something along those lines, as did Lumen make any sort of payments towards Tucker, either for the production, for travel in any way, because he had to go to Qatar to do this interview.
Yeah.
So did he receive, maybe he wasn't paid like individually or independently.
But his network was paid, right?
Well, there's no evidence from Lumen 8 that in this FARA registration that they paid anything to Tucker. It says that what they were hired to do was, because they're a U.S. company, is the reason they had to register, and they advised the Qatari prime minister for this interview, and that's why they had to register as a FARA agent, or had to register with FARA.
Well, then where'd that money go?
Well, Lumen was paid $180,000.
So they were just basically paid as a mediator?
No, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. So I'm incorrect. So let me see. I had it here. It says Qatar investment. So Qatar paid Lumen Advisors $180,000 a month in media and communications coaching and consulting services.
There's no way that Tucker Carlson's network got any of that money. Like, he just did this whole
thing. I am not saying that there's no way.
No, I know you're not. I'm just like,
I'm just saying that
flown there, did all of the stuff that it took to produce something, and then fly home, produce it, he just did it out of the goodness of his heart and for free. That's just interesting. Because that would have been expensive.
You can make the same argument because he went to Russia to do the same thing. Like, the expense could be coming out of his pocket. It could be not. But my point being is that Loomer's allegations with the evidence that she's providing does not support the allegation that she is making.
Of course not. But people aren't going to look into it like you and I will. And they'll just see it and be like, that's it. He works for Hamas now.
Now, there has been a very interesting report from the Washington Examiner that does point out that that Lumen is being paid by Qatar to advise them on how they can work and kind of like deliver their message and influence primarily right-leaning media because it is the Republicans that are currently in office. Mm-hmm. So you can view that as Qatar is influencing conservative creators, right?
Yeah.
Or you can see that as, this is me playing devil's advocate here because I really don't have an opinion. I'm not 100% sure where this falls. You can also argue that Qatar is creating a system to influence or to promote their message via conservative, which is more nefarious, via conservative outlets versus Qatar just wants to be advised on how they can deliver their message through conservative outlets. It's a very fine line, but there is a difference there.
All right, friends, hold on to your pantalones because Rachel has some serious intel for all the parents out there who are tired of the media dumpster fire, but still want your kids to know what's happening in the world. Rachel's out here living the dream, raising lambs, homeschooling four girls, and actually has to deal with the "Mom, what's happening?" questions without traumatizing anyone after overhearing our enthusiastic podcast conversations. So Rachel, tell our listeners about this amazing video news opportunity that apparently is going to save their sanity.
Okay, so a lot of our listeners are familiar with World News, but have you guys heard of their student-focused video product, World Watch? It's daily news videos designed specifically for kids, but from a Christian worldview, like fact-based journalism that helps kids explore the world, learn news literacy, all while recognizing God's design in everything.
And you don't have to pre-screen it like content, you know, policing?
Exactly. 10 minutes, a video a day, no weird agenda, no scary stuff they're not ready for. Plus, with a paid subscription, you get access to their full archive if you want to catch up or revisit stories. Just real news videos you can actually feel good about letting them watch. And right now, you can get 3 free months. So check it out. Because unlike everything else in the media, you can trust this.
There you have it, friends. Rachel approved video news for your kids with 3 free months to try it. And we know Rachel has strong opinions. So if Rachel trusts it with her 4 girls, you know it's the real deal.
Now, and I make this comparison because remember when it was a different administration, Biden was in office, the entire talking point was that if anybody had any opposition to Ukraine, even if they said Russia was bad, but their talking points at all aligned with Russian interests, then they were being paid by Russia in some way, which we saw that a lot. Remember the whole Tenet Media drama and everything that came up?
Yep.
So it's not surprising to me that now the, I don't know, the tables have turned and now we're not hearing anything about conservatives being influenced by Russian media. Now it's an attack that conservatives are being influenced by Qatari media.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, it's very possible. I have no idea, but I'm just like bringing up, like, be aware of the narrative. And now, as of so far, there's no evidence that conservative creators, including, and I hate to call Tucker a creator, but like conservative media is directly receiving any payment from Qatar.
Yeah, don't
but
like
that's,
that.
What do you mean?
I don't like the insinuation that right-wing influencers would be getting anything from
a
foreign
country.
Yeah,
no, I get
country,
it.
Obviously. No?
Yeah.
But, I don't like a whiff of that.
I mean, it's annoying because there is a fine line. It's like, is Qatar being advised on how to
influence?
Well,
and that's what I'm saying, too. Or, it kind of happens at the at a perfect time because there are so many, not so many, but there are those voices on our side that are uniquely attacking Israel during this time and saying, you know, it's because of the war, it's because of the war, it's because of the war. But they're going hard on things that are right on the border of anti-Semitic. And it's like, I don't want any part of that. I don't want.
Did you? You sent me that clip. You saw that clip of Tucker Carlson. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Years ago.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, do you have it? Can you play some of it? It was so on the nose because he literally, it was basically like Tucker from 2000 is warning us of Tucker of 2025, where Ted Cruz was basically like, you don't question any other country. You don't question the lobbies of any other country. You specifically and repeatedly.
It's like a three. I have it, but it's like a 3 minute clip.
Yeah. But like, and you specifically attack Israel over and over and over and AIPAC and people who have Israel's best interest at mind at heart, you know. And Tucker's like, no, I don't. Don't call me an anti-Semite. I'm just asking questions. And you can agree with that or not agree with that. But then I found this clip of Tucker from 2000 who was basically saying the same thing about. Was it Newt Gingrich?
I think it was Pat Buchanan?
Pat Buchanan. And basically saying, I mean, this guy, he only asks questions about Israel and he's always hammering home about Israel and questioning Israel and questioning the lobby and questioning our involvement and not wanting us to intervene at all or give any of our money. And, you know, when it sounds anti-Semitic, it might be anti-Semitic. And I was like, huh, okay. It was very on the nose.
Well, yeah, because it was when he was with the Weekly Standard and, you know, he's a young Tucker, bow tie and everything. Yeah, a little whippersnapper. And if you watch that clip, and it's, I mean, if I had pre-planned it, I would have cut it, but it's 3 minutes long. We don't want to take up 3 minutes. So I'm going to share it in the show notes if you guys want to see it. And then you contrast it with his interview with Cruz, where he specifically is asked about AIPAC. I'm going to go ahead and put this up real quick. Here we go.
Seems to be sincere.
By the way, Tucker, it's a very weird thing. The obsession with Israel. When we're talking about foreign countries,
it's hardly an obsession.
You're not talking about Chinese. You're not talking about Japanese. You're not talking about the Brits. You're not talking about the French. The question, what about the Jews? What about the Jews?
Oh, like, I'm an anti-Semite now. Senator,
you're asking why are the Jews controlling our foreign policy?
Senator,
that's what you just asked.
Hardly saying that. And I have.
That is exactly what you just said.
Well, actually.
So what Cruz is saying in that interview is literally what Tucker says 20 years ago.
Yep.
So, and obviously you are able to change your mind, especially in a span of 20 years.
And you're also able to question the government of Israel and
absolutely.
Bibi Netanyahu and all of it without being an anti-Semite. Of course.
Yeah.
This is fine. We should be able to.
It's just wild to contrast the two after that span of time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We would love to hear your thoughts on this because I'm sure there are thoughts. And you guys might agree with us. You might not agree with us. But because we are here for open discussion and we're not particularly sensitive, we would really like to hear what do you think? Who's wrong? Who's right? What side are you on? Is there an absolute? What's going on? Like, we want to hear about it. Also, before I move into, and I wanted to mention this earlier, because a lot of people, there has been a discussion about, like, why do we even care if Iran has nuclear weapons? And I saw this interview. I'm going to include it in the show notes because I think it's really good. It's like a 10-minute clip. And it is an Iranian-American singer. Her name is Elika Laban. And she did an interview on Trigonometry, which is a really good podcast, by the way. If you guys aren't familiar with it, go check it out. In this 10-minute clip, she explains how the religious sect that rules Iran are zealots to the point where they believe that the next, I think, if I'm not, don't quote me on this, I have to remember, I saw this like 2 days ago, but like to create the real like leader of Islam or to
they have to eliminate Israel. It's rooted so it's in history, like way back to, I want to say,
I think it's like the brother of Muhammad or something.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this dates back.
Which is one of the primary things that divide the Muslim faith of the different sects. Like, this is one of them. In order to bring, it's kind of like if you were to say, like, someone was like a radical, like a true radical zealot Christian and wanted and needed to bring in the tribulations and they had to do, I don't know, whatever. Like, that would be the American equivalent, or like, you know, our audience equivalent, to provide an example. And so the whole goal here is to completely eliminate Israel in order to bring this next religious stage into power, I guess is the best way I can explain
That's basically it. Yeah.
Yeah. So go watch the video because she does a great explanation of that. So next, I'm going to go ahead and do we're going to do a hard turn, and we're going to talk about the SCOTUS ruling that came out yesterday on Scarametti, U.S. versus Scarametti. And this was a 2003, no, the case was filed in 2003, and on April of 2003. And this was challenging a Tennessee law, which is Tennessee SB1, which prohibits healthcare providers from prescribing puberty blockers or hormones to minors of gender dysphoria, but then still obviously would permit them for conditions of precocious puberty, which is the purpose of puberty blockers. They're supposed to treat children who experience precocious puberty, which means the puberty comes on early.
9 and 10 and little girls.
And so they try and hold it back until it is appropriate, you know, or for their regular stage of puberty to progress. And then they go off the puberty blockers. They're not forever on the puberty blockers, which is very different from when you're using them as gender-affirming care. And I'm air-quoting here.
Right.
Which blocks healthy, natural puberty. And more often than not, immediately they go into, what is it, hormone replacement therapy. And it causes, I'm not going to go into it, but it causes a whole lot of secondary issues, specifically, primarily infertility. Yeah. So yesterday, there was a 6-3 vote. The majority was Roberts, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, joined in full by Justice Jackson and in part by Justice Kagan. So the three progressives, not surprisingly, dissented. And it's an interesting ruling because it's not exactly the primary one, which is by Chief Justice Roberts, had like a three-step process. Step one, he says that this isn't about sex discrimination. And the key being that on this issue, the claim was that it was being that the discrimination was based on sex, which would be an immutable characteristic, which is unconstitutional.
Right.
Robert says that Tennessee law doesn't discriminate based on being male or female. Instead, he argues that it does two different things. It's based on age and it's based on medical purpose. So he points out that this is for children under 18, meaning it's not blanket, that it's not like nobody can have access to these puberty blockers. And they really narrow it down for drugs that are used for transition and gender treatment. Second was, it's an easy legal test, not a hard one. So that being the
easy test is rational basis. Government just needs any reasonable explanation for the law versus heightened security, which is the hard test, which is that government must prove that the law is really necessary and carefully crafted. Since Robert says that it is about age and medical use and not sex, Tennessee only has to pass the easy test. They don't have to pass the hard test. And states regulating treatment for children is reasonable.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is...
this will impact about 25
states. 25 states. Mm-hmm. Because currently there's 25 states that had this law in the book, and it was kind of on hold until this went through the process. And also, finally, step three, it said it was not targeting trans people specifically. Roberts claims Tennessee isn't singling out transgender kids. He says that they're just regulating one specific medical treatment, using hormone blockers to stop normal puberty for gender reasons, meaning that let's say you have a transgender child, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that's supposed to mean, but they're experiencing precocious puberty, they can still have access to these puberty blockers.
Yeah.
Now, the so question
a loophole,
is,
for sure.
Well, the question is, are there going to be any kind of doctors or anything like that that's going to be willing to?
Now they're going to use that little loophole to offer correct. Medicine to people who just want to transition their kids.
What was most interesting, and a lot of people were talking about, was Amy Coney Barrett's concurrence,
mm-hmm.
Where she said transgender people are not get no special protection. Now, while Roberts avoided saying whether discriminating against transgender people specifically would be constitutional, Barrett jumps right in and says, quote, even if a law clearly targets transgender people for being transgender, it's still okay under the Constitution.
Yeah.
Her argument being that transgenderism is not an immutable characteristic simply because of the fact that, like they argue themselves, you might feel one way at one point, you might yep. change at another, and that there's evidence of people detransitioning, meaning that you can go back and forth. So it's not an immutable characteristic. It's a characteristic that you can kind of like, I don't know, go with the flow with or whatever, which is the opposite of what would qualify as a protected class.
Right.
It's kind of crazy how common sense this actually sounds.
Well, and it is. What highlights that it, yes, and people are really struggling with this. I had multiple people in the comment section on my Instagram feed arguing with, I mean, themselves, everybody, anybody who would talk to them or engage, just about how this is such a small, you know, they did all this, the common arguments. This is such a small sliver of the American population. Why don't you care about child brides in some of our states? Why don't you care about...
we don't or what?
Yeah, I don't, because I don't write about it enough. I don't know. This is less than the amount of children that are...
So that should justify mutilating them and sterilizing them. Okay.
Why don't I talk about the kids who are homeschooled and abused? And I'm like, well, okay, first of all, there's way more kids that are being transitioned than the, you know, the few... I mean, these are the arguments that they have to use, because actually acknowledging and dealing with the complete break from reality that it requires for you to say, yes, I am indeed okay with a parent aiding in the delusion that their child has, thinking that they can change their gender and then take medicine and poof, you get to be a boy now, or you get to be a girl now. That is wild when you have to say it out loud and go, yeah, I think that that's okay. I think we should be able to lop off body parts off of children, because what, you want to support them and make them feel good? It's wild.
It's wild.
But there are a lot of people out there defending it. And
well, I found
asking
this,
us to think deeper about it. And I'm like, I don't need to think deeper about any of this. This is crazy.
Well, I found this clip. This is a leftist progress, whatever, creator. He, I believe, did a video response to this ruling. And I want to play it for you.
Some quick breaking news. The U.S. Supreme Court announces a decision this morning on U.S. versus Scrimeti. That's the Tennessee case that was challenging the state's gender-affirming healthcare ban for transgender minors. In a 6-3 decision, the court announced that that law was not subjected to heightened scrutiny. And that means that Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for transgender youth still applies. At its core, this case was about whether or not transgender kids could get the same health care that their peers receive. Because the puberty-blocking medications that are being used to treat cisgender kids for precocious puberty are the very same medications that are banned, but only for trans youth. This decision was literally just announced, so I'll be back later in the day with more updates on the implications and what it actually means. But in the meantime, I want to send so much love to all the transgender youth and parents and caregivers out there. I know this is not the decision that we wanted, but our fight is far from over.
Okay, no, it's not being given to all their peers. Precocious puberty happens in an extremely small segment of society. Even if it happened in a large segment of society and it was all their peers, they're being used for two totally different things. One is going to irreparably harm a child for the rest of their lives, and one is going to help them for a limited amount of time of their lives. So, no, this
and
is a dumb argument.
Transgender kids still have access to puberty blockers if they have a condition that would treat them like a legitimate medical condition. So I think it's, you know, it's, I played that because the language there is very manipulative.
Sneaky. Very sneaky.
It's very sneaky.
Right.
And because it's suggesting that they don't have access to it. And it's almost like arguing, I don't know, this is a very simple kind of example, but like, let's talk about, I don't know, aspirin or whatever. Everybody has access to the aspirin. The aspirin is used primarily for treating a headache, and I don't know, maybe like thinning blood or something like that, but for headaches primarily.
Right.
You would not give that to someone if it were to cause an adverse reaction, or if it was a medication that if used incorrectly or for, you know,
potentially harm,
could potentially cause harm
a child and could harm them for the rest of their lives. I'm not talking about like give them an adverse reaction for 24 hours. I'm saying literally change the trajectory of their lives, of their health, of their sexual health, of their ability to have children, of their ability to carry children, to breastfeed their children. Like, we should not have to explain any of this. This is why.
Well, thankfully, our audience, for the most part.
Well, yeah, we're preaching to the choir here. But if you ever needed a demonstration of the complete break from humanity, from reality, from biological truth, from natural law that our culture has undergone, this is it. There is no such thing as a transgender child. There's just children that parents would like to aid in their childhood imagination.
And I think it's really sad because I think a lot of times it's not always for the same motive, but the motives for doing that are really sad. Either because it's a type of Munchausen or because they want to prove of how tolerant and what's the word? Empathetic they are
out of fear, out of manipulation on the outside.
Yeah.
Out of manipulation from the medical industry telling them, well, you'd rather have a trans kid than a dead kid. It's like, this is a perfect example of how lost we are as a culture, that this could even be an actual, like, it had to go to the Supreme Court that we shouldn't. And yet, even with that ruling, there's a lot of people in our country that still think this is okay to do to children. It's wild.
Well, I mean, we just saw one, so.
Yeah. I mean, that was a pretty great mustache, though. I mean,
I know
it was for the handlebar.
He had like one of those curly handlebar mustaches.
I like that. My dentist used to have one of those. That's what I would stare at while he was working on my teeth. I think those types of mustaches are kind of fun.
I don't know. I found this ruling really interesting because there was a Supreme Court case, Bostock. And that one was about employment and sex discrimination in employment. And it was the Supreme Court ruling that the Biden administration used as a springboard to rewrite or, you know, bastardize, frankly, the Title IX. Mm-hmm. And it's what they use as being an excuse is like, we can't do sex discrimination in Title IX, which was what was allowing men to be in women's sports. And I find it really interesting because of Barrett's concurrence. The only difference is that this is not going to have any effect on Bostock because that was sex discrimination. And this is more about medical, like the medical access.
Yeah,
the question of whether or not there was discrimination on access to the medication, and there's not based on sex, not based on anything. It was just like
It's not age. It's not sex. It's not a big deal. Versus Bostock was argued, which Roberts, interestingly, did the opinion on. No, Gorsuch. Gorsuch did the opinion on Bostock. And to summarize that, it was sex discrimination because you can't discriminate against a man for dressing as a woman because then you're discriminating them on the basis of their sex, which is... I don't know. It's just a very, I don't even want to say nuance. It's just kind of like it's a very like lack of reality of what the real issue was on that,
right.
On that claim, but on that case, but it's not going to have any effect. And I was really interested if it would. And I was actually talking to someone who is an attorney, if it could possibly, because of my concerns of like, if the administration were to switch over, that Title IX could be affected again like it was during the Biden administration. And then we're going to have to go into this, you know, whole, which isn't a question that has been answered yet by the Supreme Court, specifically for Title IX, you know? So, I don't know. It is good news. It'll definitely have some ripple effects. These 25 other, I think it's a total of 25 states.
Do it in all 50. We want all 50.
And the thing is that these 25 states can move forward, but for sure, just like any other legislation, it also means that other states will start picking it up.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Just like, remember, like the whole, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but open carry wasn't a thing. And now like the majority of states open carry.
Yes. Or yeah, it'll be a ripple effect.
Constitutional carry, I should say. They have constitutional carry.
Yep.
Which I'm glad every state that I have an affiliation with does. But I'm going to go ahead and any thoughts, concerns, anything you want to add before I wrap us up for today's episode?
I don't think so. I mean, I had something, but it's gone now. It's disappeared. I'm thinking about my cheese toast for breakfast.
Mm. All right. Now, if you guys want to read a little bit more on the conflict, I highly recommend you guys go and listen. Listen to our past episodes with Amanda Peterson. Our episode over the weekend of Unfiltered was with Amanda. That is behind a paywall, but if you are a free subscriber, you can get the first 15 minutes for free. I would highly recommend, just because like we would like you to cross over to, you know, help us out, but also because you can listen to this episode with Amanda. We're currently running a 30% discount for annual subscribers. That link is going to be in the show notes. Also, I'm going to go ahead and include her Substack in the show notes. She's been posting on Substack. She recently did a post that I thought was really good, specifically talking about the narrative of possible World War III. It's a short read. It's a good read. I recommend that you guys go check it out. Give her some support. And I think that's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Hopefully nothing will happen over the weekend and we won't have to do any kind of special episodes.
You're so cute. Sweet summer child.
Did I just jinx us?
Yeah, seriously. We're going to be busy this weekend.
I know. Say a little prayer. We're praying for peace, praying for everybody who comes out on the other side, all right? And especially pray for our leaders that they make wise choices in the interest of our nation. And honestly, just of how this will affect the world. So that's it. That's all I have for today's episode. We will see you again, hopefully, on Tuesday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. This is your first time here. Welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button. Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a lovely review. Share it with a friend. It really helps the podcast grow. And that's it. We're out. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.